You're listening to the John DePietro Show, the terrible story out of Pawtucket. Now, I have new details of this, new information. The father, who is stands accused, J.O. Resendez, the father was in court yesterday. And then after that, someone they identify as the uncle, I've learned that it's not a blood relative that... and he's very nice guy, and I've been communicating with him, Adri, but it's more of, they say that in Portuguese families, the relationship is so close that he considers himself an uncle. It's a little bit convoluted because four people were arrested. So you have four people that were arrested because of the death of this infant. And then as a result of that, but the other three, the women that are there, are charged with child endangerment. Now, what I've learned is the reason why they were charged was because the father admitted that he'd hit the child in the past. So I'll explain the dynamic of you have six people living in this apartment in Pawtucket. And I'll go through it a little bit and kind of break it down a little bit because I've learned quite a bit. And this also plays into illegal immigration, a sham marriage. It's actually two women together. So Sheena Lusciuto was outside of court and was in covering it. And they needed a translator for the father. He got involved with a... Here it is. I'll just play
into the
some of this.
Courtroom in handcuffs. 25-year-old Jao Resendez faces a judge.
Jao D. Resendez.
Facing multiple charges, including manslaughter and three counts of second-degree child abuse in connection to the death of his one-year-old son.
Santiago does not deserve any of this. It's not fair. He's just a baby. He's only a year old. Doesn't make sense to me.
Adrian Viveros says he's the uncle of the baby, who Pawtucket police say was found unresponsive on Sunday at this Arthur Street apartment. Pawtucket police say the baby was found with bruises on his face.
Baby was around at parties, like I told you. But nobody ever suspected anything. Everything was perfectly fine.
Along with the pain that comes with losing a loved one, Viveros has questions. Resendez is one of four people facing charges in relation to the death, but is facing the most serious ones. The others have been charged with child endangerment. A father himself, Viveros vows to find justice for his nephew.
There was other kids around at parties and stuff. Like, God forbid he did that at one of the family gatherings. So any of our kids, like... I don't get it. I don't get it. And now he's trying to get released? No way, man.
And again tonight, a lot of details are still unclear. Pawtucket police say this is still a very active investigation. No plea was entered by the suspect today, and bail was set at $100,000 surety.
Now, the backstory here is, so he was in the country illegally. And then there's four adults living in this apartment. So you have two women that are involved, and they're in a relationship. One of the women, who I believe is a citizen, marries him, but it's not a real marriage. It's just, so then they pretend they're a couple so he can stay. He then... the sister of one of the women that is in the relationship then gets pregnant. So then he's the father of the child that then is in the apartment. So the people in the apartment are the father, the woman that he got pregnant, her sister is in the relationship with the woman that technically married him so he could stay. But it's a sham marriage. So, but from what I've heard was the people at Hasbro were very shaken up when this child came in. The first responders on the scene were very shaken up as they saw. Right now, I can tell you that people involved in the case are mystified. This is still just a manslaughter case. they believe it should be second-degree murder. He, from what I understand, he had admitted to the police he had hit the boy in the past. Now, again, the child's 1 year old. It's my understanding the women were charged because he's claiming that he had hit the child in the past and then therefore they didn't do anything. The whole thing is so sad and pathetic that this little 1 year old is in this environment. Now the uncle that you hear speaking, he's a family friend. He's not a blood relative. So they call themselves an uncle, and believe me, when I was communicating with him, I thought he was an uncle. It should be a close family friend who seemingly, you know, is some connection with this group and certainly seemed to care about the little child. But there's just so many different elements to this, because then we're also learning that this João Resendez, the father, who's charged with the manslaughter and the child abuse, and that he had some incident that happened to him in Portugal involving, I think, a daughter that he had. So, and then what happens? He ends up in this country. So there's a lot at play, and then he needed a translator in court. People that are in our country on kind of sketchy circumstances and don't speak English, well, they're also hesitant to call 911, and that seemingly was the case here. So it's a terrible, horrible situation. I don't know. He admitted to very forcefully striking the child, from what I understand, thrusting the child into the floor of the apartment. And then it is my understanding that the child, you know, basically died of asphyxiated, which is that he was strangled. So I don't know what was happening when that happened. It's hard to, we're going to have to wait for the autopsy. It's beyond disturbing. So we have a lot on this story on DePietro.com, and it is convoluted. People trying to say, oh no, he's legal. They're talking, I know that ICE is looking to deport him after he then completes whatever jail time he's on the verge of doing and shouldn't have been here in the first place. You know, when we allow all these people in, you don't know their background. Terrible, terrible situation. Out of Pawtucket. Again, we have a lot more. You can see the pictures and so forth and read more about it on the website, DePietro.com. AJ, drywall, plaster, home improvement, call them today for a free quote. You can also find them on Facebook, 401-323-9252. 323-9252, AJ, drywall, plasters, home improvement, frame to finish basements. What a difference it'll make in your basement. Acoustic ceilings. Look how beautiful your ceiling could be. New homes, additions. Also, commercial rehabs, painting, remodeling. Contact them today. It's a family-run business. AJ Drywall Plaster Home Improvements. Call for a free quote. What a difference they'll make in your home, your ceilings, floors, basements. 401-323-9252. What a difference. Beautiful walls and ceilings. 401-323-9252. You can also find them on Facebook. It's AJ Drywall Plaster and Home Improvements for your home or business. You're listening to the John DePietro Show. Well, Channel 10, I want to give them credit that NBC 10, they were able to get an engineer who has gone on the record with them and talking about that this person believes that there were red flags on this bridge months prior to the closure. And this is important because it cuts into the narrative that has been out there. And the narrative essentially was that there was, you know, it was completely fine and it was fine in July. And suddenly now, all these months later, now there's there's something wrong with it. So no one, that doesn't make sense. I don't think to anyone that has been following this story, where suddenly something that was approved back in July and seemingly was fine, and now all of a sudden they want us to believe that there's something wrong with it. So as I've also been saying, I don't think we're going to fully know what happened with this officially, like the real story. I don't think we're going to get that until, I think it's going to be quite some time. And then I also think that we may not learn a lot until the federal investigation really comes in. Because other than that, I mean, we didn't really learn a lot on Monday. I'm not convinced that was the real nature in the goal of the whole thing. I don't think it was that. I think the real nature of it was essentially just to put Peter Alviti and some others up there. But the person that Channel 10 spoke to, a crack seen months before the sudden closure should have been cause for concern. So asked by the I-team, a crack seen in July, inspection photo should have been a warning. And this engineer said, I believe so. Now, he's at Arizona State University, specializes in construction material durability failure. I-team asked him to look over the inspection damage photos. He focused on the inspection photo from July of 2023, where a crack is seen near the rod that was later found in December, prompting the bridge closure. He points to not just the picture, but the caption under the crack in the top left. The caption mentions exposed broken rebar. With this crack, it's a shear crack. It's worrisome because shear failure in beams is catastrophic because it's sudden. He also said, this is more than cosmetic repair. This is the ability of the structural system to transmit the loads to the foundation, and it doesn't seem that has worked. So again, this is an expert. Let me bring it on. This is the sound of Brian Crandall, who I think, you know, hey, I like the fact they're getting someone from the outside. I like the fact that they've decided to not just go with the locals. So I want to play a little bit of Brian Crandall and this engineer.
With respect to the type and nature of the crack that is observed and the notes that have been written in the context of the evaluation of the damage. So if I look at that, hold on, I just need to look at the picture. What we see is that we see a crack that's diagonal. It goes from the top left of the screen all the way down to the bottom, which basically we treat these as shear type of cracking. Shear force is the force that is collected throughout the entire length of the member as it's being loaded. And then it reacts and it transfers to the abutment. But then in the beam, when we look at it, it's like a cutting or shearing force that pushes the material from one side, stays stationary, the other side tries to move up. So that's what the shear force is. And we have a crack there. And the inspector's note says up to 3 feet long, 1 foot 4 inches wide, and it's on the west face. So the thing is, there is a 6-inch deep spall and delamination. So that is worrisome because a chunk of the material has fallen off, and that has actually exposed the reinforcement rebars as well as the tendons to the corrosion. And it says, actually, it further says with exposed and broken rebar. So there has been enough stress there that has failed some of the rebar beyond their ultimate strength capacity. So we don't design for the failure of the rebar And that itself is a sign that load is not being transferred to the end of the beam. But the end of the beam, the load cannot go straight in a horizontal way. The load has to switch and turn around and go down into the abutment. But then with this crack, as a shear crack, the it's worrisome because shear failure in beams is catastrophic because it is sudden. And it doesn't, there is not much deformation until we see the complete failure and fracture. And that's what would worry me. I see that they had fixed it before from the patchwork, even before the July inspection. So I see both on the top and the bottom, there are some, whether I don't know what they had used, but it was just some type of a repair material. But the repair material is not really functioning at this stage, because in the presence of the cracks, no chemical is going to penetrate through the repair material. They're just going to get around it. That's the part. And then at the bottom, it says reduced bearing area of 1 foot wide, 7 inches long. So the bearing, the definition of the bearing has to do with the contact area between the girder and the abutment, the section in the bottom. As you reduce that area, and it could be because of the crack, or it could be because of the fact that there is damage in there to a point that it needed the repair, that means that there is less area to transfer the force from the girder into the abutment. And that would mean that if area is reduced for the same force, for the same traffic load, you will have higher stresses, higher compressive stresses that are basically transmitted there.
I want to stop it just for a moment, folks. This to me gives you an idea just how complicated this is. I know there are some people going around and trying to look and examine it for themselves, but it's very complicated. And as a result of that, that's why I don't think we're going to have an answer for quite some time. Again, that is the I-Team NBC 10. I give them credit for trying. Folks, you're listening to The John DePietro Show. All your oil needs, make it Henry Oil. Call Henry Oil today, 401-521-0200. Reliable, affordable fuel oil delivery. Call Henry Oil today. Fuel oil, diesel, gasoline delivery. It's Henry Oil, residential, commercial fuel oil delivery since 1947. They also have budget plans, service contracts, lock and cap pricing. You can depend on Henry Oil. Call them today, 401-521-0200. Serving most of Rhode Island and southeastern Mass. We got a long way to go with winter. Make sure that tank is filled. Call Henry Oil today, 401-521-0200. Henry Oil, a local family-run business since 1947 that you can depend on. For all your oil needs, call Henry Oil today, 401-521-0200. You're listening to The John DePietro Show. This story, Putin continues to be a threat. And this latest now, Russian nuclear weapon designed to be used in space against our satellites. Have you heard about this? Let's pick it up. This is on NBC.
What he says is a serious national security threat.
What?
Sources telling NBC News it is related to a potential Russian nuclear weapon designed to be used in space. NBC's Ryan Nobles joins us with more on this. Ryan, good morning.
Savannah, good morning. This cryptic warning by the chair of the House Intelligence Committee led to a scramble on Capitol Hill. Now, officials say there's no imminent threat, but the warning comes at a time when several pieces of legislation related to national security are stalled on Capitol Hill.
An unconventional warning on Capitol Hill. Chairman Mike Turner of the House Intelligence Committee summoning his fellow members of Congress to a secure room at the Capitol to review what he called a, quote, serious national security threat. Turner wants the White House to declassify the material so it can be shared with American allies. While members of Congress refuse to share what they learned, three sources familiar with the matter tell NBC News Russia is developing a space-based nuclear weapon designed to target U.S. satellites. Satellites serve as a crucial backbone for U.S. civilian communications, navigation, military operations, and intelligence gathering. The sources adding the weapon is not yet operational. The White House is reviewing its options.
We believe that we can and will and are protecting the national security of the United States.
On Capitol Hill, members entered the secure space, but couldn't say much when they left.
I think I'll allow, you know, the president and the executive branch to opine about what this means.
And while everyone agreed the threat is serious, they told the public they did not need to worry.
I want to assure the American people there is no need for public alarm. We are going to work together to address this matter.
This warning comes as a $95 billion national security supplemental package, which includes funding for Ukraine, passed the Senate, but is now stalled in the House. Republicans insistent they won't move funding overseas until the situation at the southern border is under control. But that's not all. The House is yet to approve the reauthorization of a federal surveillance program that intel leaders believe is essential to fighting terrorism and helping support the U.S. military. Some members of the GOP believe the program encroaches too much on the average American's privacy. A planned vote for this week was postponed.
And the White House will brief the so-called Gang of Eight, which is the four congressional leaders and four intel chairs and ranking members next week. They will then weigh if declassifying this information is possible. Savannah?
You know, what's also interesting is Putin is now saying that he doesn't want Biden to get reelected. No, hold on. I want to get this straight. Putin is now saying that he wants Biden. That's who he wants to win the election. He wants President Biden because he said that, and again, this is all misinformation to me. I don't believe anything that you can't believe anything that he is saying, meaning Putin. But what it comes down to is he's trying to convince people that Biden, you know, has experience. He'd rather deal with him, and that he doesn't want Trump. That Trump is too unpredictable. I don't believe that. He said, I think, you know, this is a form of he thinks he can outwit everyone. There were obviously allegations in 2016 that Putin favored President Trump. And as a matter of fact, I think that was even, if I remember correctly, something that Team Trump used to tout was the fact that he could work with him, and here was a leader that was saying that he'd be more effective. So I believe it's the opposite of everything that he says. And so if Putin says, oh, I would much rather deal. Putin says he prefers Biden over Trump and vouches for his mental ability, stating all leaders use notes cards and bump their heads sometimes. What that truly is, Putin endorses Biden for president. He's more predictable. So they're trying to say a vote for Biden is a vote for Putin. I don't believe that. I don't believe that that's reality. I think it's more that they don't want. I'm seeing some information. Mainstream media, when Putin once said something nice about Trump, there's evidence Trump is a Russian agent. Mainstream media, when Putin endorses Biden, he's playing KGB tricks on us. This can only mean he wants Trump elected. I go with that. So I don't, this business that Putin prefers Biden, it is reverse psychology. That's why he's doing it. And much so, Putin put something out saying, boy, I didn't like that interview with Tucker Carlson. It's actually just the opposite. He loved the interview with Tucker Carlson. So, but now look at what, now look what's, I don't believe that. And I can't believe the Trump people that are out there touting this. See, he prefers, but no, I don't believe that. No, look at what he's doing with Biden in office. I don't believe any of it. Boy, this guy, he is a problem. He continues to be a problem. He's just not going anywhere. How much... This is really remarkable. But as this is breaking, I don't believe that. I think it is reverse psychology. He wants it out there and wants to give Team Trump talking points to be able to say he sure doesn't want Trump to be president again. Folks, you're listening to The John DePietro Show. A great meal, a great time is waiting for you at the Cohasset Inn. Rhode Island tradition since 1977, 226 Cohasset Avenue, West Warwick. They have a large dining room, perfect, maybe a group, maybe a collation, lunch. The Cohasset Inn, getting a big group together, or maybe just you alone, or a date. 226 Cohasset Avenue, West Warwick, great staff, terrific food. They're always working on the menu, and they also have a nice lounge as well. You have the market at Cohasset right there. They're open 7 days a week. I'll see you for a great meal. Make it the Cohasset Inn. You're listening to The John DePietro Show. How about Bloomberg? Rhode Island City draws eye-popping yield on municipal debt for new soccer arena. Now, this is Bloomberg National, and they break out. Taxpayers are paying dearly to bring a pro sports team to the faded industrial city of Pawtucket, Rhode Island. And they lay out a chart, and then they get into a few short years after losing the Paw Sox, the minor league affiliate of the Boston Red Sox, to Massachusetts. Pawtucket is betting it'll be able to draw fans to a more than 10,000-seat stadium to see an untested U.S. pro soccer team playing in the sport's second tier. Last week, a redevelopment agency in the New England city sold $54 million in tax-exempt bonds to build the minor league soccer arena, Tidewater Stadium, at a yield of 8.24, equivalent to almost 14% on the taxable securities. Rosemar Management, an investment firm, focuses on riskier U.S. state local government debt, bought the bonds to help finance the future home of Rhode Island FC, which stands for football club. The debt is backed by annual appropriations from Rhode Island state taxes, including sales and personal income levies, collected within a downtown Pawtucket redevelopment district. Appropriations are conditioned on the stadium opening, currently projected for March of next year. Over the next 29 years, the state is scheduled to appropriate $143 million in principal and interest payments. There'll be little benefit for the surrounding community, according to J.C. Bradbury, economics professor. There are people already spending their money in the community, and when they're going to a minor league soccer match, they're not going to local restaurants, they're not going to movies, and engaging other types of local purchases. Unusual financing structures in the near. Research among economists, stadiums don't generate big economic benefits, has drawn criticism, but not derailed the mixed-use project, which kicked off construction 2021. We drew comfort from the commitment to the project exhibited by elected officials, including the mayor of Pawtucket and the governor. Unlike many stadium financing, this is not a project financing. It's not reliant on stadium fees or revenue to service the bonds. The city and lenders are betting that a minor league soccer team in a small market can outdraw nearby clubs in much larger markets. Rhode Island's FC Stadium will be located 20 miles south from Gillette Stadium, home of the National Football League's New England Patriots and Major League Soccer's New England Revolution. So, folks, again, just to point it out, this is Bloomberg. And people that, you know, study this and write about it and are familiar with it and look at all different types of packages, the headline alone, eye-popping yield on this debt for the new soccer arena. Again, this comes down to, is there really, I could see if there was some way to test out, is there a market for it? Okay, let's have, all right, you're not going to have a minor league baseball team. Let's have a minor league soccer team. Let's Let's look at examples. You know, the PC Friars, the whole reason they moved into what was then the Civic Center was because Alumni Hall was overflowing and you couldn't get tickets to a game. That's when people moved to a revenue. Look at a musical act or a comedian. If you have a musical act that starts playing in a local club, then they start to bump up and then they're playing in a facility that can host 1,000 fans. Then maybe, wow, they're so popular, you know, they're going to sell out, just as an example, they're going to sell out the stadium theater or the PPAC. And then, wow, they're so popular, they sold out the Worcester Centrum or the Amp. And then, wow, they're so popular, now they're going to play a stadium. There's a progression. There's a path. There's no evidence at all. 10,000 seat arena, and I understand they're going to give away tickets. They want to get as many people in there. What's a good crowd? Is 3,000 a good crowd? Not if it holds 10,000. If you're trying to build something and you start to draw a couple thousand people, then maybe you've got something. But again, this comes down to, this is all about giving labor this very expensive stadium to build. It's about that and nothing else. Folks, you're listening to The John DePietro Show. Do you need a good plumber? I found the best plumber, JMB Plumbing. Call them today. All your plumbing needs, 401-743-9153. JMB Plumbing. They've been providing plumbing services for years. Skilled professionals stand behind their work. Guarantee you will be happy. Maybe it's repairing damaged water pipes, repair clogged pipelines, maybe replace a water heater, as well as all your plumbing needs. Call them now. It's JMB Plumbing, 401-743-9153. Nothing throws off your life or your home or your business. When you need plumbing service, you need someone reliable, someone who's professional, someone who'll handle the job and do it right. It's JMB Plumbing. Call them today, 401-743-9153, JMB Plumbing, and look for them on Facebook. You're listening to The John DePietro Show. Folks, it's time for our legal segment. Joining us right now, he is one of Rhode Island's top attorneys. He's our legal expert, is attorney Tim Dodd. And Tim, we're going to start off with the story that it is on folksdepietro.com. Sunday night, Davies Tech released a statement to their community that a teacher that they have there has been placed on paid leave. They also mention in the notice inappropriate conduct. The state police are investigating. There's been some more developments, but let's start off. Take us through these accusations. And there's also, by the way, a mother who I interviewed has been very, very vocal and putting forth voicemail and texts. And we've learned a lot and gleaned a lot from her. But this story of a 39-year-old teacher at Davies and then this 15-year-old female student.
Yeah, this is a different kind of a story. I mean, the teacher, as I understand it, was voted Teacher of the Year at one time, well-liked by, I guess, the faculty and by students. But this teacher seems to have had what looks to be an obsession, if you will, with a 15-year-old student athlete. I think the young lady is a basketball player. And this teacher, I guess, developed sort of a personal relationship of some sort with this student, some of it within the school structure, some of it outside of the school structure. I guess the teacher would take the class to basketball games, and then the teacher would take this student out separately and independently from the class after hours, not for a school-related event, not for a field trip. The story develops further that apparently this teacher looks to be like grooming, contacting, texting constantly the student about getting together. Nothing overtly sexual, nothing suggesting let's go to the no-tell motel, nothing like that, but increasingly inappropriately personal discussions with this student. I think that the closest it got to overt comments was a text from the teacher to the students suggesting that the teacher thought the student was horny. The student responded saying, "I am not," something along those lines. Now, the student's mother gets a hold of the kid's phone, sees all of these, you know, constant texts, like at 2 a.m, 3 a.m, all hours of the day and night. Teacher saying, "You got to call me. We got to talk. I need to hear from you." It seemed like a very obsessive situation. Teacher goes to the school, says this is what this teacher is up to. Teacher's put on administrative leave. I think she's about to be terminated. It looks like she should be terminated. Mom takes this whole situation to the state police, who are investigating. Based on what we know right now, it doesn't seem like there's a crime for a number of reasons, unless more comes out. There is nothing about these texts by which the student was saying, "Don't call me, don't contact me, don't text me, I don't want to hear from you." Only at the very end, and I think after the mom and or the state police got involved, but the student was never saying, "Don't contact me," because had the student said, "Stop doing this," and the teacher kept doing it, that could have been seen as cyber stalking, which could be seen as a misdemeanor type crime. There's nothing so far to suggest that the teacher ever did anything inappropriate. No sexual touching, no touching for sexual gratification. So we don't have that. We don't seem to have any evidence that this student was being forced to do anything against the student's will. It's clearly creepy. It's clearly inappropriate. But I don't see yet any evidence of a crime. Further, there's nothing to suggest, based on what we know, as this whole situation was developing, because the student doesn't appear to have complained and the mom didn't learn until very late in the game, I don't think there's anything to suggest that the administration was aware that this teacher of the year was pursuing this 15-year-old in what appears to be a very inappropriate manner. Now, unless the school knew that this teacher had maybe done this with other students, which seems implausible, you know, in the case with the North Kingston coach, the school committee, everyone in sight is being sued because there was some suggestion that the administration was on notice and had told the coach, "Don't do what you've been doing." And the coach, in some form or fashion, allegedly continued doing it. That puts the administration on notice to take corrective action or remedial measures. And if they don't take measures, or if the remedial measures are insufficient, then they could be exposed to a civil complaint for money damages. That doesn't seem yet to be part of the equation in this case. It looks like the administration was blindsided, just like everyone else, that this teacher of the year was on the side, aggressively pursuing contact outside of class hours with this young girl. This is a developing story. I know you've been on it from the get-go. So at this joint, I don't think there's a great civil case. I don't think there's any criminal case unless we learn more in the coming days.
And Tim Dodd, some people may be surprised at that, but it comes down to, especially when we're talking just about the Rhode Island State Police, it's my understanding they've even inform the mother. Okay, certainly concerning, certainly inappropriate. Definitely, I'll even ask that. Does this sound like it? It does. Maybe cause for termination of the teacher, but there's a huge difference between cause for termination and then somehow that the charges are brought as a crime.
That's right. I mean, I think this is a termination case. I don't think I've heard any facts which would suggest that criminal charges would be appropriate. I think if this had gone on much longer, this relationship between these two was on a collision course to result in something real bad happening, or potentially criminal charges developing. If the mother hadn't interceded and learned about this peculiar situation, I don't think the teacher was looking to stop. It looks like as the child was backing away from the relationship, the teacher was more adamantly insisting in text, "You must call me. You got to call me now. I got to talk to you. You can't do this to me." So the teacher's persistence and or anxiety or whatever you want to call it seemed to be ramping up. And it looks like the mother helped to nip a really bad situation in the bud before it got even more out of control.
Folks, quick break. Much more ahead. Our legal expert, attorney Tim Dodd, right here on the John DePietro Show. Propane Plus. Call them today. Heating and cooling in Rhode Island, 401-885-4209. In Massachusetts, 508-252-3359 for Propane Plus. Three generations you can always depend on Propane Plus for all your heating and cooling. Call them today, 401-885-4209. Three generations, they're available 24/7. A service and delivery, and they're going to serve you for a very long time. They have a great user-friendly website. You just log on at propaneplus.com, and then you type in your zip code, residential, commercial, Propane Plus, heating and cooling, always there for you. Give them a call today in Rhode Island, 401-885-4209, in Massachusetts, 508-252-3359, the Johnson family, three generations. Heating and cooling, you can always depend on Propane Plus. We're speaking with our legal expert, it's attorney Tim Dodd. Tim, the Smiley administration, mayor of Providence, they've announced they're going to have a whistleblower hotline. I would imagine there's some different legalities that enter into something like this. What are Tim Dodd's thoughts on this new potential whistleblower hotline the city of Providence is going to implement?
Well, a couple of things. Number one, if it's an anonymous hotline, the potential for abuse, I think, would be significant. You know, I have a problem with one of my coworkers. I anonymously called this hotline suggesting all sorts of things that may not be true, which then put my coworker under a microscope for investigation. So I think there's a potential for abuse. Second thing is, if an individual has a legitimate whistleblower case, and typically whistleblower cases develop when an employee learns that there might be financial improprieties, maybe criminal, maybe not criminal, but learns of things that are happening. Many whistleblower cases, if they are presented correctly, can result in the whistleblower being awarded compensation for being the whistleblower. So let's assume that I have knowledge as an employee that there's some financial misappropriation regarding some program from which federal funds are obtained. And I just contact this whistleblower hotline anonymously or whatever, and an investigation starts. By doing this through this telephone number, I might be, as the whistleblower, screwing myself out of the potential to get significant compensation for being the reporter of the improper or possibly criminal activity. So anyone who thinks that they have a whistleblower type situation should probably contact legal counsel before they just call this hotline, because they might be reporting the improper or potentially improper activity, but losing out on opportunities that they might have as the reporter of the impropriety. But I think even more fundamentally, I think there's a problem for false reporting, which results in false investigation of something false and putting people improperly subjected to scrutiny that's not warranted. I'm very uncomfortable with the whole concept.
Folks, again, we're speaking with our legal expert. It's attorney Tim Dodd. Tim, the drama continues with Skyline. Now the city of Providence has rejected lease transfers to Skyline at Water Place and going ahead with an eviction trial. What can you tell us about this case?
Well, the reporting is simply that the Smiley administration has rejected the lease transfer to this East Greenwich company, but without really saying anything more. They say vaguely that there's other entities that might be interested in acquiring the lease that's allegedly been breached by the Skyline people. And the city's looking to go forward to complete the eviction trial. I believe it's scheduled for March 1st. They don't really say why they rejected the transfer to this East Greenwich corporation. Does the corporation have ties to the Skyline people? Is it a front? Is it a paper corporation? Is it a corporation that's had other problems? What's their financial stability? What's their track record in running this type of an operation? There's many questions which need to be answered to determine whether or not the entity that this was going to be transferred to is qualified, competent, and financially viable to take on this type of responsibility. The announcement from the administration didn't seem to touch on any of those issues, simply saying we've rejected this transfer, we're going to trial. So we can only speculate as to what led to this transfer not being approved. So there's plenty of legitimate reasons that the administration would be concerned about who this is going to be transferred to. But from my understanding, we don't yet have the whys and the wherefores as to why this particular proposed transfer was rejected.
That will, folks, continue to follow. That seemingly just continues to be an ongoing saga with the situation at Skyline. Tim Dodd, this next story, and it is the beginning of Lent, but you don't see this every day. Should a Florida man's church confession be evidence in a criminal case?
These cases come up from time to time. Typically, and there's all sorts of different scenarios for this type of situation. Let's assume an individual, a Roman Catholic individual, goes to confession one-on-one with a priest and confesses to conduct which could be seen as criminal or past criminal conduct. There are exceptions, but typically the priest is bound by that confidentiality of the priest's penitent exception. There are certain circumstances, I believe, if the person in there is admitting to a capital crime like rape or murder, that the priest does have some leeway. But this is different. This is a totally different situation. The priest penitent thing gets very tricky. This isn't even a close call in my view. This gentleman allegedly had inappropriately touched a young woman in a sexual manner. The father of the young girl learns of this, and somehow there's like this, congregation has sort of a council of elders, if you will. And the guy who's alleged to have sexually inappropriately touched this young girl is brought in and coerced to confess to what he did. And he goes in front of a number of people, like this church council, and says, you know, I'm going to admit what I did. I inappropriately touched this young girl. And the people say, that's not enough. You've got to tell us exactly what you did. Give us the detail. What exactly did you do? If you want forgiveness, you've got to tell us what happened. And he does. And he does, knowing that there's a video camera recording everything he's saying. So in my view, there's no expectation that this is like a priest-penitent situation. There's no confidentiality. He's saying this in front of a whole group of people, and he knows that what he's saying, which is essentially a confession, is being videoed. The video is turned over to the police, who use this confession and initiate a prosecution against him. Defense counsel moves to exclude the video on the basis that this confessor had a presumption or an expectation of confidentiality because he was confessing in a church setting. I don't think that will hold water. The decision has been appealed because there's no expectation of confidentiality. This thing was videoed. How do you think it's going to stay confidential if he's allowing a video of it to be made?
Yeah.
So it's an unusual case, John. It doesn't come up very often. But I think at the end of the day, the reviewing court will determine that this is evidence which should not be excluded at the time of trial.
Folks, quick break. Much more ahead, our legal expert, attorney Tim Dodd, right here on the John DePietro Show. AEP Services. They take great pride installing fences of all kinds, vinyl, wood, aluminum, chain link, experience, quality, integrity. Call AEP Services today for a quality fence, home or business. 401-228-7190. 401-228-7190. Residential fence, commercial fence, steel, wood guard, rail. They have it all. Beautiful aluminum product, decorative landscape. It adds a lot to it for your stunning property. Call the experts today, AEP Services, 401-228-7190. Residential or commercial, why not enjoy your backyard, a little privacy, or maybe keep a pet or young children inside? Remember, they also have fences. They're resilient, water-resistant. Call today, 401-228-7190. Free quote. AEP Services, the fence experts, 401-228-7190.